first case for argument this morning is Ruiz Cabrera against Holder. Mr. Tolan.
Good morning, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Daniel Tolman. I represent the petitioner, Benjamin Ruiz Cabrera. The petitioner raises two issues on appeal for your review today. I would like to begin with whether the BIA incorrectly affirmed the denial of his application for protection under the Torture Convention, and then move on to whether the agency incorrectly denied his application for withholding of removal. Your Honor, beginning with the Torture Convention claim, the BIA's affirmance of the denial of the petitioner's claim for protection under the Convention Against Torture was incorrect for two reasons. First, it was based on an application of the incorrect legal standard for the type of review that the board should have been engaging in. And second, it was not based on a full and complete consideration of the record evidence regarding torture. Your Honors, if I may begin by drawing your attention to the actual portion of the BIA decision regarding petitioner's claim for protection under the Torture Convention. It essentially consists of three sentences. It has one generic regulatory cite and one generalized case cite, a matter of JFF. It is nearly impossible to draw any conclusion about the BIA's reasoning or what factors they may have considered in reaching this decision. This makes review problematic, but it's also a sign that this issue should warrant a remand so that the board may properly address the petitioner's claim for relief under the Torture Convention. Regarding the standard under which the decision was reached, again, we are not really giving any indication as to what the board's thinking was. The issue of whether petitioner qualified for relief under the Torture Convention involves a question of fact and it involves a question of law.
I'm puzzled by this line of argument. Haven't we held that it's not possible to prevail under the Torture Convention without also prevailing on a request for withholding of removal?
Your Honor,
it's a higher standard.
It is a higher standard with regard to...
So if we decide that the board did not err on the claim with the lower standard, the claim with the higher standard necessarily falls.
Perhaps, Your Honor, if the board had properly addressed some of the mental torture claims that the petitioner had raised, which had not been addressed in the discussion of withholding relief. So the petitioner had asserted a claim for relief under the Torture Convention based on mental torture as well. This was addressed through his argument to the board, and the board never addressed this. So that is one avenue where the board could have found that he warranted Torture Convention relief, having not addressed it under the withholding test. So, Your Honor, the two-part issue is that there's a question of fact as to how likely is the event to happen, and there's a question of law as to whether that event amounts to torture. And the board should be applying a de novo standard to the legal question and a clearly erroneous determination for the factual question. In this case, in these three sentences, it really appears that the board only applied the clearly erroneous standard applicable to a question of fact of how likely it was to happen. This is reinforced by the only case site that we have, which is matter of JFF, a case in which the Attorney General was looking at the issue of the likelihood of the petitioner in that case is, I'm sorry, the respondent in that case is torture. So we see that it seems that the board, even though they haven't articulated what exactly they were thinking, it really does appear that they applied the incorrect standard. And if this is the case, this court should remand this matter back so that the board may apply the correct standard and reach whatever conclusion it may at that point.
Counsel, at page 31 of your brief, you state that the record is replete with evidence of conduct amounting to torture, including his past arrest by law enforcement based on fabricated allegations. The allegations were fabricated by his wife, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So is it your contention that a government engages in torture of its citizens when it makes an arrest based upon accusations that turn out to have been false?
No, Your Honor. If that had been...
That's what it looks like.
It does, Your Honor. The difference in this case is that the arrest itself is cited as an example, as one instance of a broader pattern and an escalating pattern, in particular at the time when this happened during the petitioner's return visit for his father's funeral in 2002. It was at that time that first there was the false arrest. She had stated that she was going to get him, and there was this false arrest. Then there was the incident outside of a nightclub where she sees the petitioner and his friend leaving, and then suddenly the police stop them, do not approach the driver. They approach the petitioner along the passenger side and try to plant drugs on him. The petitioner realizes, perceives an escalating pattern of the petitioner's spouse using the state apparatus against them, and he flees. He fears for his life, and he flees. So the actual, just the fact that the police arrest somebody on a charge that turns out to be false by itself does not amount to persecution, but as part of the ongoing pattern of behavior that the petitioner was experiencing, we believe that it does, Your Honor. If I may return to the torture claim argument, Your Honor, then to wrap it up, I guess on the second point, as far as a full consideration of the relevant record evidence, the mental torture issue, as I have alluded to, has just not been addressed. And that's something that the board needs to do on remand. So, Your Honor, moving on to the other issue that we raised today for review.
Sorry, just one more question, yes, counsel, before you move on.
Yes, Your Honor.
I frankly tend to think usually in terms of kind of escalating standards for asylum, which your client missed, withholding of removal, and the Convention Against Torture, at least in terms of the extent of the harm inflicted or threatened. Is it correct that the torture convention does not require proof of some kind of protected ground?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So in theory, at least, it's possible to prevail under the Convention Against Torture without prevailing on the withholding of removal. It would depend upon the motivations of the persecutors.
That's correct, Your Honor. The torture convention relief has no requirement that the individual carrying out the torture be acting for any particular reason.
But it does require that they be acting on behalf of or with the acquiescence of the government.
Correct, Your Honor. And in petitioner's case, since his spouse is an elected official, she cannot take off that elected official hat when she goes home. Her actions are essentially, it is as though...
Why yes, not?
Anything she does is state action, in essence?
Your Honor, the...
If I go home and I then walk up to somebody on the street and shoot him, could somebody sue under Bivens and claim that I did that as a public official?
Your Honor, Bivens is a little bit different because in this case the regulation doesn't require that the official be acting in an official capacity. It's just that the acquiescence, that the direction
of... But it has to be an action of the government. That's fundamentally a state action question. It might be even more stringent than thinking of state action under 1983 or Bivens. But I don't think you want to adhere to a position that says we have to persuade you that everything every public official does is state action.
That's correct, Your Honor, and I don't think that the court needs to reach that conclusion in this case in order to grant the petitioner the relief he seeks.
I have one short question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Social group, is it correct that the social group is spouses of politically connected people in Mexico? Is that shorthand of what the social group is?
Your Honor, it is a subset of that group. It is the spouses of politically connected individuals in Mexico who face persecution at the hands of corrupt law enforcement and political officials. So not everybody who's married to an elected official in Mexico is going to fit in this group. It is the people that are subject to some form of persecution. Well, which actually we can dovetail into that if Your Honor would like, as there is obviously a circularity issue there.
Is this a unique social group? Is that alleged anywhere else, or is you able to find that in any other case?
I have not, Your Honor. I think that this is the first time that this group has been formulated in quite the way that it has. Mm-hmm. So this actually is one of the reasons, Your Honor, the issue with the particular social group is one of the reasons why we argue that the decisions of the immigration judge and of the BIA denying petitioner's application for withholding of removal were incorrect. The agency erroneously found that the particular social group that had been proposed is circular. Your Honor, the agency essentially found that this is a circular group, but then they also went on to find that there was no nexus between the persecution and the group. And that just simply doesn't make sense. If you can separate the two, then the circle is broken.
Well, your group is defined, in essence, as a collection of personal vendettas, right?
not the group, but the persecution that the petitioner has experienced can be defined that way.
Well, your group is defined as this collection of individuals, each of whom is a target of a separate personal vendetta. Right?
I see, Your Honor. Yes, it is. In that case, isn't it that can be, actually.
Isn't that a problem?
If I may backtrack, yes, that would be a problem, Your Honor. I guess it's not just defined as vendettas because the motives, you know, why each particular politically connected spouse is going to engage the state apparatus in persecution. I see that my time has expired, Your Honor.
Please answer.
You can certainly answer Judge Hamilton's question.
Thank you, Your Honors. The reason why each particular politically connected spouse chooses to engage the state apparatus in the persecution of his or her husband need not be a personal vendetta. Whatever the differences between them may be, whatever the motivation is, the fact is that the individual being persecuted is married to this person who's in a unique position to harm him or her. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Counsel. Mr. Hayes.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Timothy Hayes on behalf of the Attorney General. I'll start with the outline that my colleague presented, and I'll start with the Convention Against Torture application. The Board articulated the correct standard at the beginning of its opinion, and there's no indication in the opinion that it applied the wrong legal standard. I understand the argument to be centered on the statement that the Board said it would not disturb the immigration judge's conclusion as to the Convention Against Torture application. The Board is allowed to say that without there being a presumption that it applied the incorrect legal standard. In 1994, there was a case called Matter of Burbano that was adopted by the Board that says in cases where it feels that the immigration judge has done a thorough enough job, it will say we adopt and affirm the immigration judge's decision, meaning that it adopts all of the rationale the immigration judge articulated on that point, and that's what it's done here. It always, in 1994, it had de novo review authority over everything. So the insinuation that because now some things are reviewed for clear error and some things are reviewed de novo, it can't just say we adopt it and affirm is pretty frivolous. Turning to the withholding application, there's been a lot of discussion about the false arrest claim and petitioner's wife. There is no indication in the record that petitioner's wife was even involved with that false arrest claim. The only evidence that petitioner presented was he was pulled over after he returned to Mexico for his father's funeral, and the police officer, instead of going toward the driver, went to the passenger's side door and tried to plant some cocaine on him. From that, he is drawing an inference that his wife, who happens to be chair of a Mexico City political organization, was involved and it was politically motivated. There simply is no evidence, and certainly not compelling evidence in the record, to support that conclusion. Turning to the withholding of removal application proper, the primary reason why the agency denied it was he hasn't shown that the past acts or his future fears would be on account of a protected ground. That is, that his wife would not be motivated to harm him because of a protected ground. There's a lot of discussion about the wife's political connections, and I agree with Your Honor's characterization. Simply being politically connected does not show that the motivation is political. There has to be something in the record to show that Laura said, he's against our party, he's for another party, I want you to harm him, because there's nothing like that in the record. All we have here is simply a personal vendetta, a pretty sad situation of a marriage that is rocky, and unfortunately the wife seems to have some mental issues.
Rocky is mild.
Yeah, I agree, Your Honor.
Okay.
Unless there's any questions from the panel.
I'm trying to think this through, Mr. Hayes. Suppose the petitioner is the target of a personal vendetta by a dictator. I gather there would be, under your position, no relief in terms of withholding of removal. There might be in terms of the Convention Against Torture if it were that serious a harm that were threatened.
That's right, Your Honor. The discussion about there not needing to be a nexus with torture is absolutely correct. That's where torture is kind of looser than withholding, but torture is also more stringent than withholding in the sense that the definition of torture is actually higher than persecution.
Okay. Suppose we did have crystal clear evidence of a nexus to political opinion here. We've got false charges. He
he's shot at,
he's threatened, some physical assaults. Would that be sufficient to, I guess, first support a finding of persecution?
Well, in this case, the agency actually said no. It said even if you assumed it was motivated by a protected ground, the cumulative effect of the harm was insufficient.
I know they said that. That's why I'm a little troubled by it.
I don't particularly like the holding either. Whether it would compel the conclusion, I think that's a closer question. I certainly think that a reasonable fact finder could find, mm-hmm. if the ground was motivated by a protected ground, enough here for persecution. But I don't think that they were required to. I think when you look towards prospective persecution, it's possible that you can find enough here without even having to kind of delve into the harm. If you really feel that Laura is going to shoot him, and there's a clear probability that she's likely to shoot him because of protected ground, I think that would be enough. But the problem is we don't have a protected ground here. And the other issue is there was a shooting, but the shooting seems so far attenuated from Laura. It basically was a person heard that his sister was involved with the petitioner, presumably because Laura was circulating false information and attempted to shoot him. So it's kind of a step removed. It's not as if she even instigated that. It sort of just happened. Anything else, Your Honors? Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Our second case of the